Are you ready? The Cornelia Stephanie Show Lady Boss knows what women want: to be free to speak their voice, to live in financial freedom, and build businesses that radiate wealth, leaving legacies we can be proud of. Every Friday, we bring you Lady Boss entrepreneurs that are changing the world. Diane Solano, the energy entrepreneur. Dana Terrio, handle the lump, heal your life. And Joan Sharp, changing the conversation from money to vision. See you Fridays.
Welcome back, everyone. We are episode 2, part 2, Be an Anti-Racist. This is a new movement that we are creating right now, and I'm going to be introducing you to my new other co-host here in just a moment. This episode is all about a new movement, and that is about ending racial discrimination. We're going to be talking about how to change that. We're going to be talking about, you know, pointing the light, the shining the light on where it is that we really need to have the conversations, because it really comes down to racist behaviors, and we can't change something that we don't acknowledge. How do we change these behaviors? This requires an integrative, holistic approach. First, we have to admit that we have racist behaviors, and then we must begin the internal process of self-inquiry, self-learning. And for each person, it requires a willingness to look at where they can improve. And I always like to say, to have compassion, because when we wake up to behaviors, you know, this is something we used to do, where we used to do it like this, or this is what we used to do. Offer yourself compassion, and of course, offer the other person compassion too. My name is Cornelia Stephanie, and I'm the founder of Empower Network. My mission is, I champion humanity's sovereignty, the authority over one's own life as empowered creators. My work is about self-healing, liberation, empowerment, and freedom. And with these podcasts that we do here every Friday, we're always bringing you entrepreneurs, stories of hope, people that are out there that are changing the world and making the world a better place. That's really what the foundation is. And the foundation is love. You know, I'm a self-love activist. You know, I'm very good now of loving myself. And that says a lot, because I used to be a person that hated myself. I had self-hatred at the core. And if you can turn that around, I know that if I could turn that around and go from self-hate to self-love, then we can all do it. And so, you know, we're all learning how to love ourselves more and more, so that we can then extend that love to our brothers and sisters from around the world and in our community. So here to talk about this next segment, part two, is I'm going to introduce you to my other niece. And this very special woman, her name is Jennifer Mitchell, and her maiden name was Jennifer DeSmanglis. Jennifer Mitchell is the mother of three children, ranging in ages from 15 to 21. While balancing being a single mother and a heavy work schedule, she enjoys traveling, culinary experiences, and the comfort of family and friends. And Jennifer is a, She's responsible for human resource. I lost the other part of your bio, honey. Just a second here. For some reason, this blacked out. So let me 1 second to find it again, because I want to make sure that I introduce you properly. Okay. Yeah, there we go. Here we go. So Jennifer is acting as a company's director of human resources for a large manufacturing company that's located in South Florida. prior to working in manufacturing, she was the director of human resources for various healthcare organizations throughout South Florida. Jennifer has a Bachelor of Business Administration, is working on her Master's in Finance, and received her Senior Professional in Human Resource Certification in 2008, as well as achieving a certification in various disciplines within the human resource realm. And like I said, she's the mother of three, ranging in the ages from 15 to 21. She's a single mother and balances a heavy workload. She enjoys traveling, culinary experiences, and the comfort of family and friends. Welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Thank you.
So it's amazing, you know, making a goof, introducing you. And here's the thing. It's like, you know, oops, sorry about that. And then we carry on and we continue on and forgive ourselves in the process. And it's okay. It's okay. This is part of it. So I got to tell the audience, you know, not only this incredible bio, and it was also awesome to see it all in place, your accomplishments and everything, because you are also my niece.
Yes.
And you're my niece in family because you are my sister's daughter. And so I've known you all of your life, and I've known you since you were born because you were born in Germany. And your mother is my sister and your father is Haitian, right?
Yeah.
And so we've known each other for a long time.
42 years.
That's amazing. 42 years. And hopefully your brother can join us here in a little bit. He said he might try to be able to come on. Zach, if he does come, just let him into the green room, please. So yeah. And it's been an incredible journey because you're the mother of three.
Yes.
And so, and then I have a couple pictures. Zach, would you show the pictures that I sent you of Jennifer's children? So there's one of the three of us, and it was when we were in Seattle.
Okay.
And we went to the Ferris wheel, remember?
Yes.
It was me, you, and LJ.
Yes.
And that's Jennifer's son. And then we also have a picture of you and Jackie and LJ.
Jeremy.
Yeah, we also have that one. And so it's interesting because when you look at your children, you know, LJ, the audience can see it. We can't see it here, but
okay. We
can see that Jackie can pass for white.
Yes.
And, you know, LJ, you know, do you get like stares from people or, you know, have you experienced any of that?
I think it occurred more in high school. Jackie went to a very, I guess, a prestige academic high school. She was in the gifted programs through, there wasn't many minorities. And I don't, you know, her and I will speak about race, not much, but I think she correlates herself more onto the Caucasian, the white side versus black, even though she grew up in all black, so to speak, family. And because she's also more into the arts and where she was, it was predominantly white. So that's where she assimilated to. So I remember one time we all went to the family to the movie theater and she ran into some classmates and they were looking at her like, who are these people with you? And I remember, you know, she's like, I've been telling you, you know, my family is black. My family is black and nobody ever believes me. You know, so, you know, that was kind of the first time I realized, like, wow, where really do you identify with?
Yeah.
And I kind of saw that firsthand from her because she can choose either way. You know, where myself growing up biracial in the 80s, you didn't have that. You had to pick a box. You know, were you white? Were you black? Were you Hispanic? Were you Asian? You had to pick a box. I remember in school, I was like, well, I'm both. And they said, you had to pick one. You know, that was the direction growing up. So, you know, so now to see that made me think about where we are today. Do children really do have to pick one? Or should I require her to identify as what I identify with? You know, so it put a lot of things into introspect in regards to race, because I never really thought about it for my kids at that time.
Yeah. Is this something now that, because it's really interesting, because I can totally see that, you know, that because she went to an academic school and all that and was mostly all white, she passes for white. I could totally see it would just be so much easier to go with being white and, yes, and identifying with that. So that's probably where she's at now. And then do you guys talk about this today, you and her, about this subject, race, and where she identifies mostly with, or is this not even something that's on the table right now?
I think the last time we spoke about it was when she really started dating. When I kind of was asking, you know, what characteristics are you looking for in a partner? And she really, you know, and we also spoke about different races. Would you date outside, you know, in different races? And her preference was, she's like, I prefer white guys. And I asked, why? You know, because considering, you know, my husband, not her father, but my husband's black, you know, the children are black. So we kind of grew up almost in she grew up in a black home. So it really threw me off is, why would you, you know, kind of shun what you know? But she's like, I don't find black men attractive. I don't feel that connection. I just prefer white guys. It's like, okay, you know, what can I say? It's like, you know, I always told her that don't put race so much on the topic, because a nice person is a nice person no matter what the race is. But, you know, you can't fight attraction either. Yeah. You know, you're attracted to who you're attracted to.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, you know, this is all playing out, you know, for her. And that's, you know, again, she gets to choose how she wants to live. It doesn't matter whatever choice she wants to make. She gets to be who she is. And that's, I think, the piece about acceptance. And as long as there is not no hatred or judgment against the other race, because that's what we want to do, is we want to talk about not discriminating against, to not be a racist, right? To not add to that. But how do we have the conversations to really look at how do we feel about it? So what about your son, mm-hmm, which is, he's super handsome, by the way. Yeah. And so what about him? Do you have conversations with him about, you know, like what's going on in the world right now? Because how old is LJ again? Remind me.
15. Yes.
Yeah. So he's 15. I mean, and he's super brilliant. So super smart. My God. So do you have conversations with him about what's happening today in the world?
We do. I mean, I speak to him because as a mom, there's no question what race he is by looking at him. You know, yes, he's biracial, you know, and he has a quarter white. So he can check that, you know, mixed race box. He qualifies. But someone from the outside will never look at him that way, just because of the color of his skin. And, you know, so I do speak to him, and I have spoken to him on the prejudice of the world. And it hurts because he has the biggest heart. And he is a very intelligent young man. So I could see his future. There, you know, he determines where he can go. There's no holds barred when it comes to that. And he does want to go into the engineering world. So, you know, and initially he was looking at MIT to go to school. And as a mom, first thing I started thinking was, wow, MIT, what a great accomplishment. So I pulled the statistics and everything on that school and noticed really only 4% blacks are in that school. And it kind of scared me because will he be able to relate? Because even in high school, he actually was able to get accepted to the same school his sister was in. And he had a totally different experience. I remember him being in, he's going into 11th grade or 10th grade right now. But I think when he was about 7th grade, he walked into a classroom, and it's an advanced mathematics classroom. And my son is to me the typical teenage boy, likes the name brand clothes, likes the Jordan shoes, you know, that's the age. And I remember him telling me that the teacher was questioning whether he belonged there. Like right off the bat on the first day of school, like, oh, I think you have the wrong class. It doesn't look like you belong here. You know, and I asked him, what does that mean? And fortunately for me, he hasn't been subjected to blatant racism. So he wouldn't be able to understand some of the covert language, so to speak. You know, he just thinks, well, you know, the teacher doesn't think I'm here. Let me check my schedule.
You know? Yeah. Like,
yes, I belong here. Here's my schedule. And it was still questioning. So when he told me that, like, as a mom, I felt if there was something underlying there. Like, you know, if the school signed him here, why are you questioning him? Is it because how he looked? It makes you wonder, is it because of the way he looks? Did you question anybody else who walked through that classroom?
Right. I'm sure that she questioned it because this is the kind of behavior I'm talking about. That's the kind of behavior that, that just happens automatically, because a behavior is something that it's like, it's a pattern. It happens over and over and over again. And that's why we want to have these conversations, to make people aware of some of these behaviors so that they don't do it anymore. Right. To be like, well, no, why did I say that to this kid? You know, because this is the part. Black people have had to deal with this so long, where it's like, you know, especially black men, they've had to, you know, when it comes to the police, it's like they have their own challenges that they've had to deal with when it comes to this, just because of, you know, who they are. I mean, I played a video, we're going to play this here again, here on this podcast too, in just a little bit, of Congressman John Lewis, who just recently passed, and he was the voice, the consciousness in Congress, and really his message was about to be peace and to end violence and racism, and that was what his message was, his lifelong mission was. And he talked about how many times he was in the wrong place, you know, where he found himself, and all of a sudden right away he was discriminated against because of the color of his skin.
Right. Well, it hurts. It hurts as a mom, you know, especially when your child tells you, because you would hope that the world has evolved, especially in a population that serves children of all different, you know, race and cultural backgrounds, because you're molding my child, so to speak. You know, my child is with you sometimes more than they're with me. And it hurts to say, wow. You know, you're judged not on your merit, but based on the color of your skin, kind of, you know, what we are trying to fight and shed to light.
I can see how that's hurtful. I can see how that would hurt you.
Yeah. So, it's really teaching, and I have to teach him how to respond. And that's my biggest, I guess educational moments for my children right now. Is how to carry yourself and how to respond, and respond almost in a manner of courtesy. Because if you respond in the manner, as if they see you, you're justify what they see. So it's teaching them to be articulate and teaching them to be more profound in their defense. Because if they respond almost in an emotional aspect, which, you know, all of us in any situation, when we become emotional, we may not be carry ourselves in the best manner, you kind of feed into their perception. So will you win to change them? Maybe not, but you will win to the fact that you did not you did not become what they saw.
Yeah.
So, and that's really where I'm teaching them, because you can't, you know, in the ideal world, people will, those blinders will come off.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, we have to be a realistic world. My kids are growing up in a realistic world. So I have to teach them how to cope when they interact with those who have those blinders on, and how to carry themselves in a way not to justify the other person's perception.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. And really, actually, the truth is they really don't have to defend themselves. You know, it's like not even, they are, have every right. It's like, it doesn't matter, because if it was a different colored person, then they wouldn't need to defend themselves for being there either. So there's no defense needed. It just is. I'm a human being and I belong here, period. Mm-hmm. You know, that response.
It is.
That response. I'm a human being and I belong here. And so, but again, like you said, we're dealing with a reality of racism and of cruelty and of unconscious behaviors that people do. And that's why I think it's timely that we're having these discussions, and also to make people aware, like even anybody that's watching this podcast, and I would like everybody that is watching to, you know, support us, to share this with your family and your friends and get it out there to people so that we can really shine the light on some of these behaviors that have been going on, and we can all improve. We can all improve. Every single one of us can improve and learn something in a way that we can treat each other with more kindness, with more love, with more compassion, with more awareness. Like, my gosh, you know, I didn't realize, you know, to look at it this way or to look at it that way. And that's why I want to have these conversations. So, yeah. What about you, Jennifer? Like, where do you see the discrimination in your own community? Like, do you see it at work? You know, because like, would you say that you pass for African American, or do you?
I would identify more with African American. And I think, and you know, when we spoke about this topic and I started really meditating and really become self-aware of my own biases and why do I identify with African American when I can go either way, you know, just by right. what made me, and I really went back, like I said earlier, growing up, you had to pick one in your little boxes at school and all the paperwork you always have to fill out to identify what race you are. You couldn't check two. It wasn't as prominent as it is now, biracial. So picking one and just the color of my skin, it's like, well, you're not white, you're black. So it's like, okay. And then growing up, just finding a belonging, because teenagers can be mean normally. And so growing up, it was, where do I fit in? So I didn't grow up in an environment where there was, you know, primarily Caucasian. It was different blacks, neighborhoods. And initially, I would say black Americans, so to speak, really didn't accept me. I don't know, because I don't know. They just didn't accept me. They were like, well, you're not really black because you have white in you. Okay. You know, so yeah. That was that piece. And then the Haitian community didn't accept me. And I think it was just culturally black blood, because with their history, they did not like biracial or mix based on just their culture. So what really, the more the other side of the Caribbean environment embrace me, so more the Jamaicans, the Trinidadians, because in those islands, there is a lot more mixed races. It's more predominantly known. And not just black and white, but Asians and blacks and, you know, English and black. It's more of a melting pot in those little islands than they ever been on this big, in this big continent over here. So, so they welcomed me with open arms. Like, nope, we know who you are, you know. You're here. And so that's kind of where I grew up with and identified with on that side. And just kind of because I was embraced, and I embraced that culture as well.
Yeah. So, wow, you know, that's so true. You know, we gravitate towards the race that accepts us. Yes. And I think, right, it's what it comes down to. I don't know if you heard the other show when I was talking and I was sharing an article that I wrote about when I used to be a racist.
Yes,
and I discovered that, right? And
yes.
What I discovered is that part of my African-American family, that they accepted me, that I was accepted there. I felt accepted there. And the reason why I started developing a hate towards the white race is because I didn't feel accepted there because of the judgments, because my partner was an African-American man, or my father was an African-American man, right? My stepfather, not my real father, but my stepfather. And the judgments that came with that. And so then, yeah, we then we're shaped into a race where we're accepted. And the African-American race accepted me. Mm-hmm. That's where I felt at home until I moved to Washington, where I found there wasn't any black people around here. So all of a sudden I was faced with, you know, only white people. And that's when I realized, oh my God, I have a problem.
Right.
But really, Houston, I have a problem. There it is, you know? So, and that's why I was asking you about you, you know, where are you now in your life? Like, what about your friends? Are your friends mostly African-American, or are they mixed?
My friends are mixed. My friends are mixed, and it's beautiful to see when we're out, you know.
You're all mixed up?
Yeah, the whole shade of, you know, and because I really thought about that too. But I, you know, I do have a melting pot of friends, and I think the self-awareness and the exposure of being, I guess, biracial, or understanding the flight almost of two sides, helps me grow in my career as being, you know, human resources, because my role is to help people almost assimilate to an organization, so to speak. So by understanding their flight and almost being that translator through, you know, through the corporate pipeline, you know, it eases a lot of the transition as well. So, you know, I grew up in below poverty area. You know, my grandmother raised me, so below poverty, so I can understand that flight. Grew up, you know, in the predominantly black neighborhood, so understand what that means and the struggles that come with that. And through the years of putting, you know, going through school and just providing a better life for myself and my children, I put myself in different communities, and you start to assimilate there, so you can understand, almost speak both languages, and find that common ground.
That's excellent, Jennifer. Excellent. Excellent way to put it. Excellent. Yeah. So basically right now your community is you have both. So you have a well-rounded community of, yes, you know, everybody is. And so what do you feel right now needs to happen? Where do you feel that we need to work as far as racism, and where do you see it, you know, in played out maybe in your workplace or in your community or whatever? Where do you see it, and what would you like to say about it?
I think where we need to be is just to acknowledge it. And, you know, I look at the police brutality, and I look at the riots, and I feel like so much could be prevented if the police force says, yes, that person made a decision that did not align with our values and our beliefs. But they didn't. So, you know, either you're covering up or you're accepting this behavior, this unjust behavior towards another human being. Because we're not, yes, when we say we want justice and acknowledgement, it means that we just want you to say a mistake was made. I mean, we understand people make mistakes. We understand, you know, that sometimes, you know, unfortunately people are killed by accident, so to speak, but own that. And say, you know what, that was not the target, this person did wrong, and we're gonna hold this person accountable. That really, if they were to do that, this community can be united. Instead of making excuses and reasonings as to why it was okay, you know, to treat someone as an animal, so to speak. as if they didn't matter.
Yeah. You know, when the movement with George Floyd, when he was killed that day, I didn't even get news of it until almost a week later. And at first I didn't know where they were talking about. I was really shocked that it was happening here. What? I was what? You know, like that. And then, you know, when we watched it all play out on the news, cause I don't really have the news. I don't have a news in my house. So, I realized, you know, like George Floyd, this man really was the beginning and the end of racism, mm-hmm. meaning that, you know, because of him, everyone, that was like, enough, this is enough. And that's when this whole movement, you know, was born. And I know there were a couple of other ones that lost their lives, and I don't remember their names, and I apologize. But I know that because of George Floyd, you know, in 2020, this was the new movement of no more, that, you know, Black Lives Matter. And the whole Black Lives Matter needs to be brought into balance, you know, like this needs to be amended and talked about until it's brought into balance, you know, but in a peaceful way, not in a destroying property, looting, you know, all these kinds of things, because that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about in a peaceful way, and amends need to be made. I really feel like, you know, like you said, Jennifer, you said it, that if people could just acknowledge, you know, I'm sorry, like I did in the other show, where if those four words, those four things, the whole Ho'oponopono, if we could just say, you know, I'm sorry for your suffering. I'm sorry that you suffered. I'm sorry for this wrongdoing. I'm sorry for everything we've done, behaved so badly. I'm sorry for that. Mm-hmm. You know, just even saying those words, I'm sorry. And would you please forgive me for my part in it? Would you forgive me for my unconscious behavior? Would you forgive me where I didn't speak up? Would you forgive me when I stayed silent? Would you forgive me when I was laughing behind over here? Would you forgive me? And, you know, thank you for, you know, having this conversation, and I love you. Those words, those basic compassionate ways that we can reach into our humanity for communication and love and compassion, that awareness that we need to offer each other, you know, so that we can have those acknowledgments and the amends, right? Because really, it's about the forgiveness, isn't it? When we make a mistake, and when we can say we're sorry, you know?
Right. Well, because by not acknowledging it, you're kind of saying it was irrelevant to you, which then you devalue somebody. And that's kind of where this movement is, when we say, you know, Black Lives Matter. We have value to this world. We have value to this society. We have value to this community, and we want you to see it and acknowledge our value. We're not, you know, and it frustrates me when the rebuttal is, well, all lives matter. Yes, it does. And we're not saying, but you haven't even acknowledged that we do.
That's it. That's it. That's the balance I'm talking about, Jen. That's the balance. That's what needs to happen. Yeah, because all lives matter, but first we have to bring into balance these lives. These Black lives, we have to bring them into balance. And we're going to talk about it and talk about it and talk about it till the cows come home.
Right.
Right.
And you say and rebuke Black Lives Matters and say all lives matters, you're now negating that Black lives have a value, because you're kind of dismissing the you know, the targeted race or the impacted race, and say, oh no, but, you know, yes, us as a whole, we matter, but, you know, the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal, but slavery was still going on when that was written. So really, was it geared to all?
Yeah. And well, we were talking about that. It's a great point that you just brought up, because even Latrice in the other show, maybe we can all come together in one panel. But what one of the things we were talking about, because she also mentioned the laws, and I'm also thinking, you know, the laws that were written in 1500 or 1600, I can't remember exactly when the laws were written, but maybe the laws, you know, and the laws were written by then by, you know, the forefathers who, these laws, everything was built around these laws, right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe even that all needs to change today. Yeah. Maybe even that. So we have a lot of work to do. We have a lot of work to do, you know, to make amends and make things right.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I foresee it will happen because I look at my son's generation. I look at his friends. They're all different races from all different, you know, cultures, ethnicities, countries, and they come together. So either his generation's going to make the biggest impact because they don't see skin color. They see the person as an individual. Or that generation after him. You know, is it fair to wait 50 years to see that happen? No, it's not. I mean, I'm hopeful because I see it with my children of where it's going and how they interact. You know, that the kids at his generation kind of, they're all the ones who don't, I guess, are the ones who don't embrace diversity are the outliers now. So I'm hoping majority wins, you know, going forward.
Yeah. The last thing there's no reason why we should wait 50 years. Right. The fact that we're still fighting racism and the fact that George Floyd lost his life this year, I can't even believe it that we're still there. You know, and this, I think, is going to be a good segment. I want to bring the voice of John Lewis into this because he has a wonderful voice, first of all. But, you know, really the reason why we're here having this discussion is because he fought for our rights with Dr. King, Dr. Martin Luther King. And it's because of him that the movements were made. I mean, I just want to speak to this. I just met this man in this last past week. I didn't know of him before, but because he was honored so well by our government, which I don't know who's responsible, who made those decisions, but I want to find out because whoever did that, I know it wasn't you know who, but I want to find out who did it because they honored him so well. They really pulled out all the stops. It was the full Monty. And I fell in love with this man and his principles and his value, made me want to, you know, work with him and be with him. And I want to keep his legacy alive and keep this movement going. So we don't have to wait another 50 years that we can do it now. It's like now. And so Zach, would you please play the voice of John Lewis? He made this speech in 2014 at a commencement speech. He was talking to the students, and here is his voice, his message.
I grew up in rural Alabama, 50 miles from Montgomery, outside of a little place called Troy. My father was a sharecropper, a tenant farmer. But back in 1944, when I was only 4 years old, my father had saved $300. And with the $300, he bought 110 acres of land. My family is still on that land today. How many of you remember when you were four? Now, what happened to the rest of us? It was many, many years ago when we visited the little town of Troy, visit Montgomery, visit Tuskegee, visit Birmingham. I saw those signs that said white men, colored women, colored waiting. I would come home and ask my mother, my father, my grandparents, my great-grandparents why. And they would say, that's the way it is. Don't get in the way. Don't get in trouble. But one day in 1955, 15 years old, in the 10th grade, I heard about Rosa Parks. I heard the words of Martin Luther King Jr. on our radio. 1957, I met Rosa Parks at the age of 17. In 1958, at the age of 18, I met Martin Luther King Jr., and these two individuals inspired me to get in the way, to get in trouble. So I come here to say to you this morning, on this beautiful campus, with your great education, you must find a way to get in the way. You must find a way to get in trouble, good trouble, necessary trouble. Use your education. You have wonderful teachers, wonderful professors, researchers. Use what you have. Use your learning. Use your tools to help make our country and make our world a better place where no one will be left out or left behind. You can do it, and you must do it. It is your time. In a few short days, we will commemorate what we call the Mississippi Summer Project. For more than 1,000 students from all over America, many from abroad, made a trip to Mississippi to encourage people to register to vote. And a summer night of June 21st, 1964, three young men that I knew, two whites and one African-American, Nicky Sperner, Andy Goodman, and James Cheney, went out to investigate the burning of an African-American church that was used for voter registration workshop. These three young men were detained by the sheriff, taken to jail, taken out of jail, turned over to the Klan, where they were beaten, shot, and killed. And I tell students today, these three young men didn't die in Vietnam. They didn't die in the Middle East or Eastern Europe. They didn't die in Africa or Central or South America. They died right here in our own country, trying to help all of our citizens become participants in the democratic process. As young people, you must understand that there are forces that want to take us back to another period. But you must say that we're not going back. We made too much progress, and we're going forward. There may be some setbacks, some delays, some disappointment, but you must never, ever give up or give in. You must keep the faith and keep your eyes on the prize. That is your calling. That is your mission. That is your moral obligation. That is your mandate. Get out there and do it. Get in the way. We all live in the same house. And it doesn't matter whether we are black or white, Latino, Asian American, or Native American. It doesn't matter whether we are straight or gay. We are one people. We are one family. We all live in the same house. Be bold. Be courageous. Stand up. Speak up. Speak out. And find a way to create the beloved community. The beloved world, a world of peace, a world that recognizes the dignity of all humankind. Never become bitter. Never become hostile. Never hate. Live in peace. We are one. One people and one love. Thank you very much.
When I hear this, that moves me so much. It's like all the hairs stand in me. I feel like this is probably the best keynote speech that I have ever heard. It's so clear. It speaks to so many things. And, you know, we have the blueprint. We have the tools. And even now, we are, with what we're doing here even today, getting in the way. We're talking about it. We're getting things done. We're out here speaking up. We're speaking out. We're sharing our voice. We're talking about our values. We're talking about our principles. We're talking about our vision. And now is the time to really heal and repair and restore and bring harmony back to this planet and her people, you know. What do you think about that speech?
It's profound. You know, you hear and you feel what, you know, kind of where he spoke at the end on, you know, you have to kind of your education and don't hate. And that's really what I've been trying to teach my kids. When you have to respond, don't respond with hatred or malice or, you know, because you'll never, your voice will never be heard. What I feel, you know, this world needs, we need more voices. And, you know, with Portland, Oregon, and seeing everything there, I feel like we're repeating history again, because it feels like it's back in the civil rights movement with the same beatings and extractions and everything else. But the difference is you see the different races involved this time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I was watching one of the clips where I guess there was this military gentleman, you know, white man, just standing up and being beaten by batons for this voice to be the voice, you know. And, you know, you're not going to take them down. I took it as you're not going to take me down and you're not taking them down. You know, and he just stood strong while, you know, whatever agents or whoever they're there is beating with batons. And, it, you know, you felt like, you know, it was a moment of almost like, wow, someone's there for you. You know, someone's going to be heard. It's speaking for you. So kind of where John Lewis mentioned, it has to be an education. We have to start an education. You know, one of the, I was speaking with a friend of mine and they asked me, as human resources, with the whole police, what would you do? If you were HR in a police academy, what would you do? And I was like, okay, one, we have to acknowledge there's a problem. So where does the problem stem from? We don't know. So let's, one, we have to put almost, I don't want to say a divide, but those who are investigating these instances cannot be part of the police academy. You can't, because you're going to protect your organization at the end of the day. So you need a separate element that looks into these, you know, allegations, who can give an impartial viewpoint. And then education. Education is key. We really have to bring sensitivity training. And I think also the onboarding, you know, our organization that we work at, we do onboarding assessments to identify whether you're, you know, assertive, whether you're, you know, sociable, whether, yeah, you know, certain, you know, so what profile is exhibiting these negative behaviors? Then we can't hire them. We can't hire them, because we have to bring in people who are going to change our community for the better. Not for those who is do what I say, not as I do mindset.
Yeah. And this is all key. So education's key. I mean, you talked about it earlier where you said that, you know, your son was showing up in the wrong classroom. You know, and the woman said to him, the teacher said, you know, I mean, he wasn't showing up in the wrong classroom. He didn't know, but because she thought that he shouldn't be there. So she was racial profiling him right there, which is the same way that police have racial profiled, especially African-American men. It to be at any place, at any point, in a car, in a, you know, wherever, where this has happened. And so first we have to bring that conscious awareness to the people that this is what you've been doing. Yes. This is the behavior. This is what you've been doing. This needs to change. And that's why we're having these be an anti-racist conversations, so that we can make people aware, hey, where am I doing that? Where have I done it? Where do I see it? And that if we do see it, that we gently and kindly speak up and speak out. This is the thing. That's why I want to ask the community, the people that are watching this, share this with your family, share this with your friends, support us in getting this message out, because like Jennifer said, we need the voices, we need the education, and this is it, because you're getting the real deal. This is the education. This is where it begins, right here. We're talking about it openly. You know, there's a lot of good nuggets in here. A lot of people can identify with things that we shared here today. So we just have a few minutes left, Jennifer. Zach, how much time do we have?
We have 5 minutes.
Oh, good. Okay. So, you know, what is it that you want to leave everybody with today? Like, what's the call to action that you want to give everybody, the people that are listening, the people that are tuning in that will listen to this again later? What would you like to have people do?
I think the first step to anything is self-awareness. We're going to have to identify our own biases. Because wherever areas that we're biased, we're passing it on to our children, to our friends, to our families. And, you know, and we're perpetuating racial profiling, stereotyping, any of, you know, those pieces. So first, we do have to work within ourselves and kind of try to figure out why do we see people the way we do? And, you know, and I ask ourselves, is it fair? Yeah. Once we can go through that, I think that's the first step where you're going to start seeing more of a unity, a united force in regards to that. So self-awareness is always the first step to change, because you can't force change on other people. We have to start with ourselves first, and then other people will follow. And I'm a true believer of that.
Yeah. And if everybody did just that one thing right there, it'll ripple out, and that's how the change is going to happen. You know, like Gandhi said, be the change that you want to see in the world. I always say, be the love you want to see in the world. Be the peace you want to see in the world. It starts with you, because it's all an inside job, right? So we have to be the change that we want to see. And we have to look at each other with through compassionate eyes, through loving eyes, through kindness, and a willingness to see, where have I been keeping the separation going? Where have I been keeping the behavior going? And acknowledge that within ourselves. And like you said, begin the self-awareness.
It's not about agreement. It's about an understanding. You don't have to agree with someone's flight. You don't have to agree with someone's struggles, but you do have to understand that it's there and acknowledge it.
Yeah, and that's what I mean by practicing the Ho'oponopono with, I'm sorry, I understand, you know, I'm sorry, just holding the space that you don't have to agree with it, but even just like, I'm sorry for your suffering.
Right.
I'm sorry that you have suffered, and I'm sorry for your pain. Even something as simple like that is just a softening. And, you know, we need that softness. We need that softness. We need that compassion, that softness. Like, thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you for understanding.
I agree.
Thank you for hearing my pain, you know.
Right. Yeah. And then what can I do to help you feel better?
Yeah.
Because, you know, we can apologize or acknowledge, but if our actions don't coincide, we're just going to repeat it.
Yeah.
So what can I do?
Exactly. What can I do? What can I do? How can I change the behavior? What can I do? And that's the part, is like, what are you doing to change the racial discrimination in this country, in your community, within yourself? Share with us on social media. When you see this video on YouTube, put it in the comments. You know, I want to hear your voice. Share what it is that you're doing. Like we're sharing here today. We want the engagement from you. That's the call to action I would like, so that we can build the beloved community. You know, that's one of the things I loved so much about what John Lewis was talking about, is one heart, the beloved community. It's a global community. And like, so that we can have the visions of your community, Jennifer, that you're talking about, where all the races, all everyone, you've got a nice full community. You know, you were talking about LJ's friends, how they're also, you know, multiracial, all the different, you know, people coming together. And that's really what we want to do. But we still have a lot of healing to do. We have a lot of awareness and a lot of love. So thank you, Jennifer, for coming on. Thank you, everybody. Thanks, Jennifer. That was awesome. You did so great. Wonderful to have you here. And we'll see you again. You'll come back again next month. And yes, we'll see you again. Thanks, everybody, for listening and tuning in. We'll see you again next time. Bye.
You've been listening to The Cornelia Stephanie Show, Lady Boss, Women Inspiring Women, featuring leading-edge entrepreneurs who are putting the focus on empathic leadership in today's modern-day world. Text the word Cornelia to the number 22828 and receive her weekly newsletters. For more information on Cornelia Stephanie and her extraordinary work, or to listen to past shows, go to corneliastephanie.com.